It was a huge affair, and there was one man sitting near the door, and when we came in, he said, Guten Tag, Guten Tag, Guten Tag. And we said, Guten Tag, Guten Tag. When we went out, he said, Guten Abend, or vice versa, Guten Abend, Guten Abend. And that's all. I said, oh, the little mustache. I was with Hitler 3 hours and denied I'd ever seen him. Later on, I went to Nuremberg. It was a different person.
Nur die besten Nationalsozialisten.
I can't believe it. It was a forceful personality who knew all the right words and how to scream and sway a crowd. I mean, he could get the people in hysterics. He was a terrific orator. This little man who was afraid to speak.
Somehow get $1,700 together.
At the age of 93, George Seldes can look back on a career which began a long time before the rise of Hitler. He started as a reporter in Pittsburgh in 1909. He remembers the day his city editor, Mr. Eagle, sent him to interview the politician William Jennings Bryan at Bryan's hotel.
I knocked on the door of the big hotel, and as it was 10 or 11 o'clock, he was still in bed. And that surprised me. And so I stood there and I said, Mr. Bryan, my city editor told me to ask you, are you going to run for president a fourth time? When he heard that phrase, a fourth time, which was stupid of me to use, he says, out! Get out, you impudent cub! He was right. I was an impudent cub, and he jumped out of bed, and there was an elderly man in a union suit with a flap in front and a flap in back, and he came and pushed me out the door. I said, Mr. Eagle, I'm sorry, there is no story. He didn't answer your question. He just pushed me out the door. Eagle's eyes lit up and he said, did he hit you? I said, well, he pushed me out the door. He says, did he give you a sharp push out the door? I said, well, you could say that. He says, sit down and write every line of it. And don't forget the flaps in front and the back of this union suit. So I sat down and I wrote this story, and it didn't make the big headline in 72-point type, but they did put it in large type across three or four columns that said, Bryan assaults leader reporter.
A long way from that first easy headline were the real assaults of France. Covering the final days of the Great War for a press syndicate, George Seldes learned that being a reporter meant not only getting the big scoop, but getting it out. The censors were also waging a battle to keep the public from knowing the full horrors of war for the men fighting it. Seldes had taken photos of the carnage and shipped them off to be published. Or so he thought.
You mean you had not been able to tell the truth?
No, because of the censorship. I was one of the few journalists who took press correspondent who took pictures. Mm-hmm. And every picture of a man lying dead on the field, German or American or French, was censored. At the end of the war, I got back a stack of 100 pictures. And when I told the general about it, he said, didn't you know there are no dead in this war?
4 years later, in 1922, Seldes was one of the first journalists allowed in Russia to report on the American relief effort, a U.S. government program to help the 6 million people starving because of crop failures in the Ukraine.
People would fall down in the snow and embrace you by your legs, you see, and speak to us in English or in German or whatever they thought we spoke. Help us get out of this country. We're going to die here.
Soviet authorities let Seldes write about the struggle to save starving people, but with his nose for news, he was soon on the trail of stories they didn't want covered, and that got him in trouble again.
I got thrown out of Russia.
Why?
For violating the censorship law. I had the right to write letters which were sent out by the American relief in a diplomatic pouch. So I would send a letter to our man in London. His name happened to be John Steele. And I would say, Dear John, how are you? How is your wife? How are the children doing in school? Then I would, in the same sentence without a paragraph, I'd say, yesterday I was in the Ukraine and I saw the beginning of the formation of a new secret army which hopes someday to upset the whole regime here and establish a new democratic government. One day, the Russians heard a rumor that some of the American relief people were smuggling diamonds in the diplomatic pouch. Now, they broke the law by opening up a diplomatic pouch. They found no diamonds, but they found personal letters. We got called into Chicherin, he was the Secretary of State. We got called into his office, and he said, gentlemen, you have violated the censorship. You know the penalty. He said, well, he says, we're not cruel people. Should you miss Wednesday's train, you can take Saturday's. Well, we were all on Wednesday's train leaving for Riga, and that was the end of the Russian affair for us.
What you had done was to tell the truth about the Bolshevik purges.
Oh, I...
The excesses?
We had always smuggled out news because where you have censorship, you have suppression and you have falsehood.
Why did Mussolini throw you out of Italy in 1925?
It was censorship again.
Before he became a strutting fascist demagogue, Mussolini was a journalist whom Seldes had known as a colleague. But as dictator, Mussolini exploded with anger when European papers carried a story by Seldes that Mussolini cronies had murdered a political rival. Seldes fled Italy, but before his train could get across the border, the fascists made an unexpected appearance.
I had a compartment. Luckily, no one was in it. And I heard a commotion down there, and I went and walked out and saw a bunch of fascists with clubs, and they were yelling, Dove Seldes. Dove means where is Seldes? Dove Seldes.
You didn't say, but I'm here.
No, earlier in the day, in the night, I noticed that down in this Orient Express, of course, I went first class, Orient Express, Chicago Tribune paid for it, there were four men, and two of them were obviously, with all their stripes, they were admirals of the British fleet in Malta. I knocked on the door and said, pardon me, gentlemen, but I'm about to be killed by the fascists who are coming up and yelling for me. And I said, I'm sorry to barge in. And, you know, I apologized. And I said, they said, oh, well, sit down, sit down. We are four admirals here. And two of us are in civvies. But when they come, we'll say we're five admirals here. And sure enough, they banged, tore the door open, yelled, Dove Seldes. And the leading admiral with the most stripes, and he said, out of here, you, I think he said, sporco fascisti, which means fascist pigs, which is about as dirty. And the moment he said that, they started to grovel. Oh, perdone, signore, perdone, perdone. And they all pulled out and went down the road yelling, Dove Seldes. And oh, about 15, 20 minutes later, the train started and got to France. I almost did what the Pope does whenever he gets to a new country, to get down and actually, with my lips, kiss the soil of another country. I felt like doing it, but I haven't done that yet.
15 years and hundreds of stories later, Seldes was still the outspoken maverick battling censorship of the press and manipulation of the news. In 1940, at the age of 50, he founded the weekly newspaper, In Fact. With controversial stories other papers wouldn't publish, and with courageous criticism of the established press, Seldes won a popular following and a subpoena from Senator Joseph McCarthy. But that master intimidator and his staff were no match for George Seldes.
You know, I was up before the McCarthy Committee, and the first thing you know is, do you swear or affirm? I said, I swear by the Bible. He says, put your left hand on the Bible. Raise your right hand. Are you now or ever you been a member of the Communist Party? I said, no, never. Well, the attorney, his name was Roy Cohen, said, well, Mr. Dye says you're a subversive. Would you call Mr. Dye a liar? I said, Mr., if the President of the United States and the Supreme Court in a special session, all nine members, said I was a member of the Communist Party, I would say they are all liars.
Seldes was cleared by McCarthy. The experience was one more notch in his campaign belt to speak the truth, no matter what the situation or the personalities involved.
When I look at this list of all the people you've known or covered or corresponded with,
yes.
from Eleanor Roosevelt and Damon Runyon and William Seabrook and George Bernard Shaw, Trotsky, the Prince of Wales, H.G. Wells, Lincoln Steffens, and Jane Anderson, and D'Annunzio, and Charlie Chaplin, Marshall Falk, Lennon, and Sinclair Lewis. And
74 years, you can meet a lot of people. 74 years in journalism.
Since his wife died in 1979, George Seldes has been living alone in Vermont. Once a week, he goes to Dartmouth College to do research for yet another book. He's written 20 so far, including some bestsellers. Trying to keep up with him on the day of our visit, I had to stop and think. This man was born in 1890. His career as a journalist spanned three quarters of a century. And for telling the truth, his life was in danger and his livelihood threatened. Yet he still loves the business, still believes.
No matter what sort of a government we have, we can change it. I mean, if we have the help of the press, we certainly can change it. It's something you could never do under any dictatorship. I mean, even talking the way I'm talking to you in Russia, you'd be shocked if they heard you or if they had eavesdroppers or someone reported on you. We could form a new party right here. We can form a new party. We can join another party. If we have some of the press on our side, we can really go somewhere. At least we have the means open for freedom.